So let's read together. We're going to look at Daniel chapter 6 now. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps to rule throughout the kingdom, with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. That satraps were made accountable to them so that the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. At this, the administrators and the satraps tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel and his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt or negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So these administrators and satraps went as a group to the king and said, "May King Darius live forever." The royal administrators, prefects, satraps, advisors, and governors have all agreed that the king should issue an edict and enforce a decree that anyone who prays to any god or human being during the next 30 days, except to you, your majesty, shall be thrown into the lion's den. Now, your majesty, issue the decree and put it in writing so that it cannot be altered in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed. So King Darius put the decree in writing. Now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room, where the windows opened toward Jerusalem. Three times a day he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to his God, just as he had done before. Then these men went as a group and found Daniel praying and asking God for help. So they went to the king and spoke to him about his royal decree. "Did you not publish a decree that during the next 30 days, anyone who prays to any god or human being except to you, your majesty, would be thrown into the lion's den?" The king answered, "The decree stands in accordance with the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be repealed." Then they said to the king, "Daniel, who is one of the exiles from Judah, pays no attention to you, your majesty, or to the decree you put in writing. He still prays three times a day." When the king heard this, he was greatly distressed. He was determined to rescue Daniel and made every effort until sundown to save him. Then the men went as a group to King Darius and said to him, "Remember, your majesty, that according to the law of the Medes and Persians, no decree or edict that the king issues can be changed." So the king gave the order, and they brought Daniel and threw him into the lion's den. The king said to Daniel, "May your God, whom you serve continually, rescue you." A stone was brought and placed over the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the rings of his nobles, so that Daniel's situation might not be changed. Then the king returned to his palace and spent the night without eating and without any entertainment being brought to him, and he could not sleep. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried into the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue you from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent in his angel, and he shut the mouths of the lions. They have not hurt me, because I was found innocent in his sight. Nor have I ever done any wrong before you, your majesty." The king was overjoyed and gave orders to lift Daniel out of the den. And when Daniel was lifted from the den, no wound was found on him because he had trusted in his God. At the king's command, the men who had falsely accused Daniel were brought in and thrown into the lion's den, along with their wives and children. And before they reached the floor of the den, the lions overpowered them and crushed all their bones. Then King Darius wrote to all the nations and peoples of every language in all the earth, "May you prosper greatly. I issue a decree that in every part of my kingdom, people must fear and reverence the God of Daniel. For he is the living God, and he endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues and he saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions." So Daniel prospered during the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian.
Thank you for that. That was a great reading. That's a great story, isn't it? The story of Daniel, so well known. Well, something that maybe not all of you know, actually not many at all would know, that recently I moved house. I've got a new home. I'm not far from here, but like many of you, I'm happy to travel to a great church like Christchurch St. Ives. I've got about a 20-minute commute. But my new, much smaller house is much closer to the city, and it's much closer to the harbour as well. And I want to start with confession at church today. I know it's awkward to start a sermon with a confession, but my confession is that I think this move, this new home, has rekindled my love of Sydney. I really love Sydney. Now, I know there's some people here probably who are from Melbourne, and I'm sure you love Sydney as well now that you're here. I mean, I know Melbourne's got great coffee, and Melbourne's got... And Sydney's got great coffee too. And Sydney's got so much else, doesn't it? It's such a beautiful place. There's endless opportunities to do all sorts of things. Beautiful beaches, stunning harbour, endless opportunities for work. There's great entertainment. There's the new eastern wing of the art gallery. Have you been there? There's also open inside that. There is a library inside the art gallery where you can go and quietly work on a sermon during the middle of the week. And no one's there. It's so quiet. Don't tell anyone because I don't want anyone to interrupt me. It's a beautiful place. I love Sydney. I really love it. But I'm telling you this because my love of Sydney is part of the reason I think I struggled with Daniel chapter 6 this week. I struggled with it because I knew where the sermon was going to end. And I knew that I had to rethink some things in my life, some loves, some priorities. And I'm not sure if I really wanted to as I began. Well, our Bible reading from Daniel chapter 6, of course, is not set in beautiful Sydney. It's set in the beautiful city of Babylon. And now for some of us, as we've read through Daniel so far, we might be thinking that Babylon is a place of torment and pain, with raging kings and despotic regimes, with fiery furnaces everywhere and lions roaring, roaming the streets, nightmarish dreams and all sorts of terrors. But history actually tells us that Babylon was probably a pretty good place to live. Under the clever rule of King Nebuchadnezzar, large-scale building projects were undertaken. Work was available to those who came from the lands that Nebuchadnezzar had conquered. And he worked towards this project of assimilation, of bringing everyone together so that there would be prosperity and abundance for everyone. In fact, one of the seven ancient wonders of the world, the Hanging Gardens in Babylon, was said to be constructed under King Nebuchadnezzar's rule as a gift for his wife. In fact, God's people were told by God that when they got to Babylon, when they were exiled out of Israel into Babylon, that they could live good lives. In Jeremiah chapter 29, we read this. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens. Eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number and do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it. Because if it prospers, you will prosper too. So at this point, we pick up our story in Daniel chapter 6, and the people of God have been in Babylon for almost 70 years. They've actually lived there now for generations, and they've seen things come and they've seen things go, and they've gotten on with their lives. They've settled down. And we actually know from the books of Ezra and Esther that not all the Jewish people returned to Jerusalem. Many of them would have felt quite content. They would have prospered greatly. They would have set up businesses and run things in a way that they felt quite at home in Babylon, even though it was not where they belonged. And others maybe just said, it's too difficult to move back. I'm here now, and this is just the way it is. Well, the Daniel we meet in chapter 6, he's no longer a young man. He's no longer the man we saw in those early chapters. He is old. He's well into his 80s, but he's still a standout with his exceptional qualities in his distinguished conduct. But even more than that, Daniel is faithful. And the story of Daniel's faithfulness is seen in this beautiful story of the lions. And it's quite simple. There is Daniel. He's successful. He's admired by the king. But evil men plot against him. And they set a trap, and they set this tricky, silly law that is meant to make people worship the king and only the king. But the plan underneath it, of course, is to trap Daniel, to lead Daniel to death. And this law is unbreakable. And even King Darius is unable to have the power to change this law. And so King Darius, he despairs because he cannot rescue Daniel. But the true King of Heaven, the living God, does rescue Daniel. But the law still leads to death. But not to the ones, not to Daniel, but to those, the death of those who plotted against him. And then a new law is given to worship the true and living God. And Daniel succeeds and he prospers even more. This is the same pattern we've seen with several of our stories so far in Daniel. We saw it with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where they started off in a good position, but then were taken low, but God raised them up even higher. We saw it with Nebuchadnezzar. He himself, a great king who was brought low by God, but God raised him up to an even more prosperous place. And here again we see it with Daniel. And it's that pattern of bringing down near death and restoration to something new that we see through the Bible, and we see it in our lives as well. But I do want to dig in a little deeper to just a couple of ideas in this passage in a hope that we might be able to see how we can better live in Sydney in 2024. Now, one of the things that is central to this story is the law, a new law contrived by evil men to bring about the death of Daniel. And the 122 satraps and administrators, of course, they're jealous of Daniel. Daniel has once again distinguished himself. And so they're looking for a way to bring him down. But whichever way they look at Daniel, they can find nothing wrong with him. Both his public life and his private life are beyond reproach. So just as we saw in Daniel chapter 1, Daniel is the same. He is humble, he is dependable, and he's faithful. Just yesterday, I saw this post come up on my Facebook page. This is 14 years ago. It said, sat behind a guy on the bus today who was 80 plus. He was reading his Bible and praying, I want to be that guy one day. And that's Daniel, isn't it? He's that guy. He's the one who stays faithful, who stays dependable, who stays praying. He was faithful as a 20-year-old. He was faithful as a 30-year-old, 40-year-old, 50-year-old, faithful in his 60s, in his 70s, and he's still faithful in his 80s. But his faithfulness didn't guarantee him an easy life. In fact, it was his faithfulness that attracted the evil plotting. And in verse 5, we get a glimpse at a private conversation between these satraps, these rulers, as they try to bring him down. Finally, these men said, "We'll never find any basis for charges against this man, Daniel, unless it has something to do with the law of his God." So knowing that Daniel would follow God's law, they create a bad law, a law that brings death. Of course, anyone reading this account would have to ask themselves what they would do in this situation. What would you do? If a law was given where you couldn't pray for 30 days, what would you do? It's only 30 days. And here's your option. You can either not pray and live, or you can pray and die. It seems like such a small compromise, doesn't it? Such a small compromise for such a great gain. And I'm sure you know this in your own life, as I certainly know it in mine. There are times when we say to ourselves, I'll make that small compromise, that compromise in my faith, and I'll justify it because I think it will lead to bigger and better things. Well, when Daniel learned this decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the doors were open, the windows were open towards Jerusalem. Three times a day, he got down on his knees. He prayed, giving thanks to God, just as he'd done before. Daniel, 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 what have you done? What have you done? If only you'd closed the windows. If only you'd prayed privately in your own head. You're about to become the prime minister of all of Babylon. You're about to have the opportunity to have so much impact for good. You could make great changes, Daniel. But this new law has caught him out. And this law brings death. And that's the nature of the law. The law leads to death. As Paul says in Romans 9, 7 verse 9, I was once alive apart from the law, but when the command came, sin sprang into life and I died. Even God's good and holy law does not bring life. It only leads to condemnation and death. And the exile is actually a living reminder of that fact. God's people have been warned again and again by the prophets to turn away from idolatry, to turn away from sin, or risk being cut off from the promised land, the place where God was with them, their temple. The temple, the place they went to meet with God, and every other precious building had been brought to the ground. We see this account in 2 Kings 25. We read, on the seventh day of the fifth month, in the 19th year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan, commander of the imperial guard, an official of the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem. He set fire to the temple of the Lord, the royal palace and all the houses of Jerusalem. Every important building he burned down. God had given his people his good and perfect law. But because of Israel's sinful nature, it only led to their condemnation. And of course, it's the same with you and me. Although God's good law shows us his character and his goodness, it also shows us our sinfulness and our hopelessness. So if you think that in Daniel chapter 6, Daniel is saved by God because of his adherence to the law, because of his goodness, he's not saved because of his goodness. He was good. He was a hard worker. He persevered. His daily disciplines were excellent. He had wisdom. He had insight. But these things did not save Daniel. Because, of course, that would mean Daniel could save himself. We know that not only is the law powerless to save us, but we are powerless to save ourselves. I do wonder whether from time to time we get mixed up, especially when things are not going well. And like a Pharisee, we start to congratulate ourselves on our goodness, or our excellent church, or our precise theology. And we begin to look down our noses on those who don't hold the same position on some minor point of doctrine. And although we would never really say it out loud, we do say to ourselves sometimes, my life is good because I am good. I'm clever. I'm wise. But then I know there's others amongst us whose internal dialogue is more like this. I'm a sinner. My life is not going well. Things are hard. And it's probably my own fault. But here, the good and godly Daniel is thrown into the pit. His life is not going well. And we see again and again through the Bible that there's no guarantee of a good life for a godly person. As Paul reminds us in 2 Timothy 3, in fact, everyone who wants to live a godly life in Christ Jesus will be persecuted, while evildoers and imposters will go from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. And so there is Daniel, and he's thrown into this pit of lions, and King Darius is powerless to save him. This evil law seems to have brought certain death. But the Lord brings life. All the way through Daniel, we've seen these two kingdoms. We've seen the kingdom of men, men who make decrees and demands, who thrash around with their power, bending people to their own will and whims. These men, they come and they go. They rule for a time, but then their time is up. And their kingdoms come crashing down. But then there is the other kingdom, the kingdom of the true and living God, the one who set the stars into space and puts breath into your lungs. And he rules and reigns forever. He is the king who brings life. And I wonder if you notice, as you read this, as you heard this passage read, if you notice the amazing parallels that are so often talked about between Daniel and Jesus. And we see that Daniel, of course, is opposed by this law, this tricky law. And so Jesus is opposed by a tricky law as well. And of course, we see Daniel is helped by a ruler who can't help him, just like Jesus is helped by a ruler who can't help him. Both men are sentenced to death. Both men are placed in a tomb. Both men have a tomb sealed by a rock. And both are rescued from a tomb. Both have visitors running the next morning to see how things have worked. And although I think it would be nice to say this is a perfect parallel between Jesus and Daniel, I think this is much more like the experience of the good and godly man or woman. Like Daniel, even though we might prosper, we will face persecution. Like Daniel, despite our efforts of other men to help us, sometimes in life there will be no help. Like Daniel, we may find ourselves walking through the valley of the shadow of death. Like Daniel, it may seem from the eyes of the world that our fate is signed and sealed and delivered. And like Daniel, it might seem there is no one to rescue us. But the heavenly king does what the law cannot do. The heavenly king does what we cannot do. And the heavenly king brings life where it seems there's only death. And like Daniel, we're able to stand before the throne innocent in his sight. Now, this is the last chapter of what you might call historic accounts of Daniel. And we're about to head into a more apocalyptic part of the book. In chapter 9, we'll actually see Daniel stand up and he'll make a confession. He'll confess sins on behalf of Israel, but also on behalf of himself. And this makes sense because we know, as we know with all people, even the good and godly Daniel, that we're all sinners. And so the question is, with this passage, how can Daniel say in verse 22, how can he say on this side of the cross that he is innocent? Have a look at verse 19. At the first light of dawn, the king got up and hurried to the lion's den. When he came near the den, he called to Daniel in an anguished voice, "Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to rescue from the lions?" Daniel answered, "May the king live forever. My God sent his angel who shut the mouth of the lions. They've not hurt me because I was found innocent in his sight, nor have I ever done wrong before you, your majesty." How can Daniel say that he's innocent? How can he be confident that his own personal sin is no more? And how can you and I be confident of that? Let me take you back to verse 10. There's Daniel. He's in the upstairs room of his house. And the windows are open towards Jerusalem. They're not glass windows, of course. They're shutters. And if they're open towards Jerusalem, they're fully open. And they face a place that is a pile of ash, a place that has been torn down. His windows face a place that seems hopeless, something that is ash and rubble, that the world sees as useless. But Jerusalem is Daniel's hope. The thing that is defeated is where he puts his hope. The promise, of course, of God is that the temple will be restored and the people will go back and God will be with his people and they'll be together again. And this is the hope of the promise of God. Jesus, he says, "Destroy this temple and I will raise it again in 3 days." Of course, Jesus is talking about his own body. And that's where our hope lies. Our hope lies not in the sparkling things of Sydney, not in the beautiful things of this world, not in our prosperity, not in anything we can do in this place, but our hope lies in Jesus, the hope of the resurrection, that we too will be raised with him. He is our hope. And as King Darius says, for he is the living God. He endures forever. His kingdom will not be destroyed. His dominion will never end. He rescues. He saves. He performs signs and wonders in the heavens and on the earth. He has rescued Daniel from the power of the lions. And he'll rescue you and me as well. Let me pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you for this good old story that we've heard time and time again. We thank you that reminds us that we can only be saved by your promises. We pray that we put all our hope in you. Amen.